Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Megillah Daf Vav. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you're not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the Shiur. And even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. As we turn our attention to today's Gemara, we will begin from the bottom line of Hey Amud Beis. But before we begin the Gemara, we must point out that we have already started a series that's indicated by a diamond marking. You'll notice on the upper part of the wide lines of this Gemara, the word Rekes was in a diamond. This was explained in our Mivneh heading, in our previous shiur, that these represent Shemos Nirdofim L'Tveria, alternative names for the city of Tveria. We'll be also using a double underline when the name Tveria comes around. Of course, Tveria is a city in the northern part of Eretz Yisrael, and the Gemara will be debating or presenting different possibilities regarding the name referring to Tveria. The diamond marking, as you can see, will continue in use on the upper part of Daf Vav Amud Aleph. So we begin the Gemara from the bottom line of Hey Amud Beis. Omer Rabbi Yochanan, Ki Havino Talia, when I was a Talia, a young person, a Na'ar, Amino Milsa, I said something, Disha'ilno L'Savya, I said something that had been asked of, that I had asked of the elders, the Ishtakach Kavasi, and the answer came out like I had intended, like I had supposed. Chamos Zu Tveria. Veloma Nikra Shmo Chamos Al Shum Chame Tveria. So Rabbi Yochanan says that he had pointed out that Chamos is the name or a reference to Tveria, and why is Tveria called by the name Chamos? Because there were Chamei Tveria, Chamei hot springs of Tveria. The word Chamos, you can see, has as its shoresh, as its root, the word Cham, meaning hot springs. Rekes, Zu, Tzipori, where you see the term Rekes used, that's a reference to the town of Tzipori. V'loma Nikra Shma Rekes, why would Tzipori be used or be referred to by the term Rekes? Mishum de medalya karakso de nahara. Medalya means something that's positioned high up. So it's high up like the banks of a river. A river flows in its river channel, which is generally set in to the river banks, the banks being higher than the river itself. So the term Rekes sounds like the word Raksa Dinaro, the river banks, indicating something that's high up. And in fact, the town of Tzipori is located high up in the mountains. Kineres Zuginosar, Voloma Nikro Shma Kineres, a third city that's referred to. We don't have markings regarding this particular town because it's not going to figure too prominently in the flow of the Gemara and debates regarding names, but we simply termed it or referred to it as Gimel, the third city in this particular presentation, and it's where you see the term or the word Kineres used, you should know that's a reference to the town of Genosar. V'loma Nikra Shmo Kineres, why is Genosar referred to by the term Kineres? Answer, the Mesiki Peiro Kekola de Kinri. The fruits of Genosar are sweet, like the sweet sounding sounds from the Kinor musical instrument. The kinor is the name of a musical instrument. It produces a very sweet sound. So here there's a comparison between sweet sound and sweet fruits. Hence, Genosar, which was a region in which very sweet fruits grew, was also called Kineres. Before going further in the Gemara, we noticed a new marking. On the second line from the top, we noticed a crown marking. In the outside margin, you'll notice we have a mivneh, a structural note, simun, this particular marking, lahemshech ha-gemara, letzorech diyun b'shmo shel tzipori. This will be necessary later when the Gemara deals with the name or alternative name for the town of Tzipori. Up till, however, our immediate business is dealing with the name given to Tveria, in other words, alternative names for Tveria. At this point, you can see Rava's name is circled, and there's also a long question mark, and you see the kuf that's encircled to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text with a vertical dashed line. All of the lines of the Gemara opposite this vertical dashed line form the question. Omar Rava, mi iko leman domar rekes lav Tveria. Is there anyone who would suggest that rekes is not Tveria? In other words, up till now, we saw the alternative name for Tveria was Hamas. Rekes, we saw in the second line from the top, was presented as a name for Tzipori. Rav is asking, how can you say that Rekes is a name for Tzipori when Rekes, everyone would agree, is the name for Tveria? So we'll see now how that based on what Rava comes to this particular conclusion. At the end of this particular long question marking, you'll notice at the end of that line it says Elo Omar Rava. Rava comes up with his approach, and he says that instead of saying like Rabbi Yochanan said at the top that Hamas was Tveria, Rava will tell Hamas is Chameko Grar, and Rekes is Tveria. So that Rava, in his presentation, if you just compare the markings, the diamond that you see on the first wide line of the Gemara, Rekes, and you see the double underline, Zu Tveria, this is different than what we saw at the top line, where it said Hamas was Tveria. Now, what is Rava going to do? In his question, he's going to show how the term Rekes was clearly used to refer to Tveria. In the upcoming lines, there will be a presentation of different things that were said during eulogies when an Odom Godol dies. And we'll see a reference to an Odom Godol dying in Bavel and how they eulogized him. And we'll see also a reference to Rebbe Zeira's passing away and how he was eulogized. And in the course of this discussion, we will see references to Rekes. And the name Rekes is going to be used in reference to Tveria. In other words, it was obvious to Rava that Tveria is being referred to, and hence Rekes in Rava's mind is clearly Tveria. So the Gemara continues, V'ha ki shachid in ishacha. Rava points out that when someone, an Odom Godol, an important individual, died, Hocha means here in Bavel, because the word Hocha is here, then we're learning the Babylonian Talmud. So when you see in the Gemara the word Hocha, you're referring to here in Bavel. So Rava is telling us that when someone, a great man, died here in Bavel, so Hasam safti lehochi. Hasam, it means there in Tveria, they would eulogize him thusly. And we've used a double underline with dots in it to indicate words of eulogy. So he says that, Rava tells us that there in Tveria, they would say the following. Godol hu b'sheshach. Sheshach is an alternative name for Bavel. It's pointed out through letter switching. If you take the first letter and the last letter of the Hebrew alphabet, the first is Aleph and the last letter is Tuf. If you accept that they can be interchanged, and there's a method of gematria called Atbash. So the second letter of the Hebrew alphabet is a Bays. The second to last letter is a Shin. So if you see this word Sheshach, it also, if through letter switching like we just demonstrated, will come out to Bavel. So they would say the following. In Tveria, when a great person died in Bavel, they would eulogize as follows. Godol hu b'sheshach. He was a great man in Sheshach, in Bavel. V'shem lo berekes. And his name was known, his name carried over, or was well known, in Rekes. And Rekes is a reference to Tveria. V'chimaski arona lahasam. And when the person who died in Bavel, his coffin, arona, his coffin was brought there to Tveria, to be buried in Tveria. Safti le hochi. They would eulogize as follows. Ohavei Sridim, Yoshvei Rekes, the ones who love Sridim is a reference to Talmidei Chachamim, Talmudic scholars. The dwellers, Yoshvei Rekis, the dwellers in Rekis, once again, Rekis is Tveria. Tzu v'kablu haruge omek, go and receive the incoming coffin, come and receive the haruge omek. Omek is a reference to Bovel, those that were killed or died in Bovel. Kinoch nafshe de Rebbe Zera, when Rebbe Zera passed away, Posach Aleihu Savdona, the eulogizer, opened with the following remarks. We must point out beforehand, to enable to appreciate the eulogy, Rebbe Zera is someone that was born in Bovel, and he was Oile. We sometimes use the term made Aliyah. It means he transferred his dwelling, he immigrated to Eretz Yisrael. He left Bovel to Eretz Yisrael, and he died in Tveria. So when Rebbe Zera died, Posach Alei Hahu Safdona, the eulogizer, opened with the following remarks. Eretz Shinar Harav Yolda. Shinar is another name for Bovel. So Bovel conceived and gave birth. That's a reference to the fact that Rebbe Zera was born in Bovel. Eretz Tzvi Gidla Shashueha. Eretz Tzvi is a name for Eretz Yisrael. So in Eretz Yisrael raised its beloved, the beloved of the ones who were beloved in Bovel. Oy no la omra rekes ki avda kli chemdosa. Woe unto us, said Rekes. Rekes is Tveria, and notice how we've dashed, underlined Rekes each time in this long question marking to bring your attention, to draw your attention to the fact that we're referring to Tveria by the name Rekes. So, woe unto us, says Rekes, says Tveria, ki avdo kli chemdoso, because its valuable or desirable vessel has been lost, meaning the death of Rebbe Zera, who was a resident of Rekes and died there. What do we see from all of this? Says Rava, we see that Rekes is clearly Tveria, because in all of these eulogies, the references made to Rekes were references to Tveria. So how can it be said, as was said earlier, that Rekes is Tzipori, and that Tveria was called Hamas? Therefore, Elo Omar Rava. Rava now makes his presentation. You'll notice we have a lettering system here. This lettering system corresponds to the lettering that we had at the top of the page, the Aleph, Beis, and Gimel. But, of course, there will be a different presentation now that Rava speaks up. Rava says, Aleph, Hamas zu hame grar, as opposed to what we saw in the top line, Hamas being a reference to Tveria. Rava's presentation is that Hamas is a reference to hame grar. Rekes zu Tveria. And Kineres zu ginosar. You'll notice that the gimel here doesn't change, hence we didn't feel any motivation to mark it off, because here there's no issue of focusing on something that's going to change. However, when you compare your diamonds, you'll see, and your double underlines, compare what you see over here. The double underline is Tveria. What did it say at the top where Tveria was double underlined? It was associated with Hamas. Here Rava is telling you Tveria is associated with Rekes. The Loma Nikro Shmo Rekes, why is Tveria called Rekes? Shafilu Rekonim Sheba, even the empty ones, in other words, the inhabitants, the Jewish citizenry of Tveria, even if they were not known to be a big-time righteous individuals, they're considered empty. Even though they are, relatively speaking, empty, you should know, Maleim Ritz Mitzvois Karimoin, they are still filled. They fulfill many, many mitzvahs, like a rimon, often translated as a pomegranate, is a fruit that's characterized by being filled with little seeds or juice packets, if you will. But we can say filled with seeds. So the use of the term rekes is understood as referring to rekonim sheba, the empty ones. Rabbi Yirmiya Omar, rekes shma. What we've introduced here is a little numbering system. This one is to draw your attention to a number two that will follow later. And both of these, this one and two, are claiming that the official name of the town is really Rekes, and its alternative name is Tveria. We're continuing with the use of the diamonds because all of these are related to Tveria somehow, and the double underlining you'll see also is continued in our presentation. The unique feature of Rabbi Yirmiya and later will be Rabbah is that they say that the official name is Rekis. They both agree with that, and you can see that by comparing the diamonds. We've also dashed underlined the word Shema, because this is what their feature to this discussion is, a sort of emphasis on what's official name is. And then Tveria will be darshaned, because up till now, we were explaining not Tver, the other name, whether it be on the top line, we're explaining Hamas, what's the significance of it being called Hamas, or we saw in Rovo's presentation, what's the significance of it being called Rekes. Here, the tables are turned, so to speak, where the Gemara will be asking, why is it called Tveria? That's the unique difference, and we try to hint to this through our introducing numbers, which we had not used earlier. So Rabbi Yirmi Omar, Rekes Shma, the official name of the town is Rekes, V'loma Nikro Shma Tveria, why do people refer to it by the word Tveria? Shio Sheves B'Tibura Shel Eretz Yisrael. The word Tibura is a Tavur, is a navel, sometimes referred to as a belly button. It's the middle part of the body, and in the case of Tveria, it's in the middle part of Eretz Yisrael. Rabo Omar, Rekes Shma, the official name is Rekes. In this point, he agrees with Rabbi Yirmiya. V'loma nikra shma Tveria. Why do people term it or call it by the name Tveria? Shetova re'iyasa. So Tveria is essentially a contraction of two words that it looks pleasant. It's a place where it's pleasant. It might be a reference to the pleasant scenery. Maybe it's a reference to the pleasant look of the town itself. But whatever the case is, there's an association of something visual and a pleasantry associated with something of a visual nature. As we go on in the Gemara, we now will recount our crown marking. We had a crown marking earlier that was used in conjunction with Tzipori. Here, we're also going to be relating to Tzipori, which is, of course, another community. Omar Zira, name of a scholar, he says, Kitron Zu Tzipori. Kitron is an alternative name for the town of Tzipori. V'loma Nikro Shmo Tzipori. If its official name is Kitron, so why is it called Tzipori? Notice, of course, structurally, this is similar to what we saw with regard to the approach to Tveria, where, what do we mean? At the top part of the page, we said the Rekes was Tzipori, and then we asked why is it referred to by the term Rekes. Here, in presenting its official name as Kitron, the Gemara will be asking, so why is it called Tzipori? The answer is, Shiosheves Beroi Shahar Kitzipor. Tzipori was a town located high up in the mountains. We actually pointed this out before at the top part of the page. Here, there is no disagreement about that aspect of it, but using the term Tzipori is in reference to this high-altitude community, it's a Tzipor is a bird, and there are numerous kinds of birds that nest in mountains. And hence, this high-altitude community is referred to as using the term bird that nests in high places in mountains. At this point, the Gemara starts a very long question. You can see at the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text an encircled kuf and a vertical dashed line that takes you down quite a few lines. All of this is needed to develop the question. There are numerous details, of course, in this particular question. What we recommend is to go over, and we'll do it together, the topic heading that we have associated or assigned to this particular section of Gemara, and we will try in fewer words than the Gemara to present the question or the problem. So they no say in the outside margin. Eich itochein, how is it possible, the Kitron hu Tzipori, that Kitron could be a reference to Tzipori. V'ha'anu yodim, we know, a couple of points. And we've indicated this through these little bullets that you can see in the in our note here. So point one is, we know the Kitron equals Zvulun. That means that in the distribution of the land of Israel amongst the different tribes, the tribe of Zvulun received Kitron. Kitron was in the area of Zvulun. That's one point to bear in mind. A second point, Tzipori, we also know, was a Mokom Meshubach, was a, the town of Tzipori, we also know, was a very a rich location, or a place of benefit, where one, if one was in Tzipori, he stood to benefit financially by being there. That's called a Mokom Meshubach, a profitable or a beneficial place. A third point to bear in mind, Zvulun Misroim Mislonein. The Gemara uses the term Misroim, which means Mitlonein, is to complain. Al Chelkoi Shekibel B'Chalukos Haaretz. We know that Zvulun complained about the portion that he received. In other words, in looking at the distribution of Eretz Israel, he noticed his other brothers, including Naphtali, which will be featured in the Gemara, that they received portions that in his eyes, in the eyes of Zvulun, of the, the tribe of Zvulun, they received better portions than he. Now, here the question comes to a head. The Im Kitron, Shoye B'chalkosh Zvulun Hu Tzipori, if Kitron equals Tzipori, and we know that Kitron was in the Chelik of Zvulun, and assuming that Kitron is the beautiful place, the beneficial, profitable place of Tzipori, Shehoya Mokom Meshubach, that was a good place, Lama Zvulun Hitlonein. So why was Zvulun complaining? Let's go over the point again. If Kitron, in fact, is this very beneficial place called Tzipori, then why was Zvulun, who received Kitron, why was he complaining about his portion? Things would make a lot more sense if you simply said that Kitron was not related to Tzipori. Zvulun got Kitron. Zvulun did not get... he got Kitron, which was not necessarily some beneficial place because it's not Tzipori. So I understand why Zvulun was complaining. But according to what we are saying, that Kitron is Tzipori... That's what Zeira says, that Kitron is Tzipori, and Tzipori was such a beneficial place. Why would Zvulun, who received Kitron, which is Tzipori, why would he be complaining? The Gemara will answer, and here will sort of, so to speak, spoil the suspense. But the Gemara will eventually answer that Zvulun, nevertheless, even though Kitron really is Tzipori, he really preferred a place of agriculture, place of fields and orchards. Gemara will talk about Sodo Sukrama, fields and orchards. He had a feeling or a drawing toward that kind of industry, that kind of preoccupation. So that even though Tzipori, which in fact is Kitron, was a place of great benefit, but not in an agricultural sense. But in the meantime, we must develop the question. The question is, to review it again, albeit maybe for the third or fourth time, but because of the myriad of details that will be presented, it's important to have it clear beforehand. And that is, according to Zeira, Kitron is Tzipori. And that raises a question. We know that Zvulun received Kitron as its portion in the land of Israel. We also know that Tzipori was a very beneficial place, and we know that Zvulun complained about his portion. Why in the world, if Tzipori is Kitron, why would Zvulun be complaining about Kitron? Now, the Gemara inside. The Gemara asks at the beginning of the line, where we start our long question, the Kitron Tzipori hi. Is Kitron in fact Tzipori? V'ha Kitron b'chalko shel Zvulun havoi. We know that Kitron was in the portion received by Zvulun. Dichtiv, the Pasuk in Sefer Shoftim in the Book of Judges says, Zvulun lo hoyrish es yoshve Kitron es yoshve nahalol. For our purposes, without getting into any of the, even the translation of the Pasuk, what we want you to see, and we've tried to do this with our markings, we've dashed underlined Zvulun and Kitron, that you should associate Kitron with Zvulun. So that's one point. And we also know Zvulun Misroim Amidois of Havre. We know that Zruin Misroim was complaining. Zvulun was complaining about what that which he received. Shinemar Zvulun Am Chereif Nafsho Lamus. And the continuation of that pasuk is, it says Vinaftoli Al Meroime Sode. For our purposes, Zvulun was complaining. Matam. Why was Zvulun Am Cherif Nafshe Lamus? Why was he complaining? Mishum de Naftali Al Meroime Sadeh. Because Naftali received he received fields and agriculture. And the Gemara elaborates. What we've done with the new marking, you see a triangle with a colored in tip. On the outside margin under our Mivneh heading, you see Ma'akav. Ma'akav is an attempt through markings to keep track of the back and forth nature of the discussion that will follow. So the triangle facing up with the colored in tip, Dvorav Shel Zvulun Klapi Hashem, Zvulun's remarks made to the Almighty. With the flipped over triangle with the colored in bottom now, these are Tshuvosov Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, responses of the Almighty to Zvulun. The Gemara. Omar Zvulun Lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Zvulun asked of Hashem. He said, Ribbono Shelom, L'chai Nosatalem Sodos Ukromim, to my fellow brothers, you've given them fields and vineyards. Fali Nosata Horu Mugvos, to me you gave mountains and hills. L'chai Nosatalem Arosos, to my brethren, to my brothers, you gave land. Vali Nosata Yomim Vinahoros. Zvulun was a coastal location, and so he says that you've given me seas and rivers, and basically saying, of what benefit do I have from the portion I receive relative to the portion that all the others received? Omar Loi, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Kulon Tzrichin Lecha Ayadei Chilazon, everyone is going to need what you have. You have the sea, and in the sea, or from the sea, comes the Chilazon. The Chilazon was a water creature from which the Tcheles dye was extracted, and the Tcheles dye was a bluish color, if you will, and that was used to dye, amongst other things. It was used in the Beis Hamikdash, and it's used in tzitzis. The pasuk says, "Al psil tcheles." There's the addition of a blue or a tcheles colored string. In other words, everyone needs this thing, this chilazon, and they will pay for it. So, and you've got it. Shinemar, the pasuk says, "Amim har yikro usfune tmune choil." This pasuk is in the context of the brachas that Moshe Rabbeinu said in Parshas, the Zos HaBrach, at the end of the Torah, at the end of Sefer Dvarim. So the pasuk in the context of the brachas of Zvulun, it says what we just read. Toni Rav Yosef, and now Rav Yosef explains the pasuk. Sfune ze chilazon. Tumune, zu, torus. Torus is a type of fish. Chol, zu, zechulchus levona. Chol is sand, and from the sand they would produce this white glass, apparently an expensive type of, an expensive product. So, what Kodesh Baruch Hu answers says, why are you complaining? Look at the different profitable industries that you have. You have the chilazon, you have the fishing industry, you've got this glass production. Omar Lefonov, so Zvulun says back, and you can see how the triangle point up again. This is Zvulun's remarks to the Almighty. Ribbono Shel Olam, mi modi eini alzos. Who will literally inform me of this, or who will guarantee this? What guarantee do I have here that I'll get paid for it? Omar Loi, Shom Yizbuchu Zivchei Tzedek. So the pasuk continues in the same context. And by the way, these psukim can be seen on the inside margin of our marked Gemaras, the pasuk that we just read in the same context. Simon Ze Ye Lecha. The Kodesh Baruch Hu says to Zvulun, you have this as a sign. Shekol Hanotel Mimcha Below Damim. Anyone who takes products from you without paying for it, Eino Mo'il Bepakmati Shelo Klum, he will have no success in his business ventures. In other words, if someone buys or takes from you fish or glass or tcheles, they won't have benefit from it. The Rashi explains, Shom Yisbu Zuchay Tzedek, Kasher Osir Gezel Ba'Oilah, just like a stolen sacrifice is forbidden. The Ola is featured in Rashi because there's a pasuk that associates, that deals with a stolen Ola, but that's true with regard to all sacrifices. Just like Gezel is, in this pasuk we should have mentioned, Sham Yizful Zivchei Tzedek, the pasuk that we're currently focused on, Zivchei is a reference to sacrifices. So the analogy is, just like a sacrifice that is brought from that which is stolen is of no value, Kach lo yigzulu mimcha klum. So too they won't steal from you, because she'im yitol shave pruta below damim tiskalkel hatzvia. If they take from you, let us say some even a shave pruta, which even a small amount of tchelis, they take from you without paying for it, the dying tiskalkel hatzvia, the dying won't take, it won't take hold, it won't, it will be unsuccessful. They won't, because the tchelis was used to dye the woolen tzitzis. So the dye won't take hold of the wool. The hachul, velo yo il klum. The chul, the use of the sand in producing the white glass, they won't have successful glass production if they take from you your sand without paying for it. Now, the Gemara continues. The isaka daituch kitron zu tzipori, if one were to think, like Zeiro said at the outset, that Kitron is in fact Tzipori, Amai Misraim Amidosav, why would Zvulun be complaining? The Hohakyat Tzipori Milsad Adifa Tuva. Tzipori was a place that was very, very beneficial. Adifa Tuva was very beneficial. The Chitema, the Les Ba Zavas Cholavudvash, if you're gonna try to claim that Tzipori may be beneficial in some ways, but it doesn't flow with milk and honey. The term flowing with milk and honey, Rashi explains, is a reference to the goats that eat figs, and the figs themselves produce a type of fruit sap, fruit honey. That's dvash. And the imagery in this pasuk of Eretz Zavas Chol Ovid Vash is an imagery of goats that eat the figs and produce milk, and the honey drips forth from the, or flows from the figs, and the milk flows forth from the goats. Goats are milk producing creatures. So you have these two flowings that flow together, so to speak, of the milk and honey flowing together, forming a type of stream. And of course, all of this is a type of imagery. So, as far as the Gemara is concerned, you'll say, well, I'll explain why, even though Tzipori may be a place of benefit, maybe it lacks this aspect of flowing with milk and honey. That's absolutely not true. V'omer Reish Lakish, the Gemara continues, says, L'di chazili, zomaz chol advash de Tzipori. I saw the flow of milk and honey in Tzipori. V'have shisha sermil al shisha sermil. 4 meal equals a parsa. So 16 by 16 meal is, in a sense, is in effect 4 by 4 parsa, which is an area. And 4, that's a 16 parsa square, 16 square parsa of area. So that, of course, we can assume this is some form of imagery, so that the Zavas Cholav Udvash of Tzipori would have formed such a large amount of milk and honey in Tzipori that it would have formed a lake that would measure 4 by 4 parsa, which is 16 square parsa. The Chitema Dolo Nefisha Didei Kidachva, and if you claim that, okay, there are 16 square parsa of milk and honey, but still it's less than the amount received by his brothers, and that's why he was complaining. That's not true. I saw the flow of the milk and honey to whole Eretz Israel, of all of Eretz Israel, and I calculated, that the area would be like the distance from Bei Kubi, it's a place, a known place in Bovel, till Akra de Tubakni, also a known place, which is Esrin Vitartin Parsi, Urka. You're talking about an area that's 22 parsa in length, Upusya, and the width, Shisa Parsi. So if you make a calculation of 22 length by 6 width, the square area of that will be a 132 square parsa. Now, we know that there were 12 tribes, but the relative amount of 16 parsa received by Zvulun to a total of 132 parsa is quite a bit more than 1/12. In other words, the 16 parsa that Zvulun received was in fact a larger amount of Zobas Cholav Udvash than the rest of any one of his brothers, or less than the average received by the other brothers. So, after all is said and done, why was Zvulun complaining? Let's go over the point again. If Kitron is Sipori, and we know that Kitron was in the portion of Zvulun, and we know that Kitron, which is supposedly Tzipori, had a large amount of Zobas Cholav Udvash, why was Zvulun complaining? The Gemara answers, Kitron really is Tzipori, and if you want to know why he was complaining, Afilu Hachi, Sados Ukramim Adifale, Zvulun himself preferred fields and vineyards. That's what he really wanted. He had some type of that. Those people that formed the tribe of Zvulun were drawn to an agricultural lifestyle, and the section of land that he received was not of an. Though it was a highly profitable area, it was not agricultural. Daikonami, by careful reading of the pasuk, you can actually discover that that was what he was focused on. Zvulun was focused on fields and vineyards. Tichtiv, because in the same context it said, V'naftoli al meroi me sode, shmamina. Naftoli did receive fields, sode being fields, and this pasuk was cited earlier in the Gemara, and we had noted it. It was the Pasuk in Sefer Shoftim, Perakei, Pasuk Yudches. The Pasuk had begun focusing on Zvulun, where it says, Zvulun am cherif nafshu lamus, and it went on to say, V'naftoli am roi me sadeh, so that Zvulun's complaint, which is indicated by the expression, cherif nafshu lamus, was focused on that which appears right afterwards in the Pasuk, that Naftoli was roi me sadeh. As you can see, we have a slash mark here, and indicating that that which follows is a new idea, new topic, and on the outside margin we have an explanation or a presentation. Droshos apsukim, we will see psukim referred to shemuskorin bohen mekaymos akshurim leedom. That in the psukim that we will see, there are references to places that are associated with Edom. Edom being the descendants of Esav HaRasha, and there came forth from Esav the area or the empire known as the Roman Empire, and in Sfarim HaKadoshim there are references to what the Roman Empire turned into to this very day. Of course, there's no longer a Roman Empire, but there is a continuation of what Rome represents. So for our purposes, though, we are going to look at this Gemara and just attempt to translate it, bearing in mind that beyond any shadow of a doubt, there are hidden ideas, hidden references to things that we will see in this particular Gemara. But in the context of our shir, we are not going to delve into those things whatsoever. Continuing now in the Gemara, Omar Rebbe Avo, V'ekron te'aker, Zu Kesri Bas Edom, She Yosheves Bein Acholos. Ekron te'aker is a reference to Kesari of Edom, that is a place of, that's in the in a sandy area. V'hi hoisa yose tekua li Yisrael bimei Yevonim. This place represented a yoseid is a stake or a peg that's wedged in for evil. It was a bastion of evil for the Jews, of bad that befell the Jews in the days of the Greeks. So that this place had some type of historical significance during the strife between the Jews and the Greeks in that period of history. Ukshigovra Malchus Beis Chashmonoi, when the family and kingdom of the Chashmonoim, who are of Hanukkah fame, when they rose to power, Venitzchum, and they defeated the Greeks, Hoyukurin Oisah, this place was then called Achidas Migdal Shir. So for our purposes, that which was referred to originally as Ekron Teoker became known as Achidas Migdal Shir. Omer Rabbi Yossi Bar Chanina, Mai Dechtiv Vasiroisi Domov Mipiv Vashikutsov Mibain Shinov Nishar Gam Hule Lokenu. This pasuk, first of all, is in the context of a place called Tzor. Tzor was a region north of Israel, and it was a mainstay of Edom, of the Roman Empire. So this pasuk is a prophecy regarding that time and place. So the Gemara now breaks the pasuk into phrases, and with our markings we've underlined each phrase, and the Gemara will explain what it's a reference to. V'hasiroisi domov mipiv. Ze beis karyo shelahen. That's a reference to beis karyo. Karyo was the name of an idol, or a reference to an idol. So this is a reference to that place of idolatry. V'shikutsov mibein shinov. This too, in the same vein, ze beis galyo shelahen. Also the place of idolatry. So the pasuk is saying, I will remove these places. That's what the hasirosi, I will remove these idolatrous places. V'nishar gam hu lelokenu. There, something will remain. Elu bote kneisius bote midrashus she be'edom. The shuls and the yeshivas, the study halls, the Torah study halls of Edom, they will remain. V'hoyo ka'aluf biyuda ve'ekron kivusi. Kivusi is a reference to Yerushalayim. Elu, this pasuk, when it says "Vayu Kaluf Biyuda VeEkroin Kivusi," Elu Tartios Karkasios Shebeedom. These are reference to Tartios theaters, Karkasios circuses of Edom. Shasidin Sore Yehuda Lamid Beim Tori Barabim. In this pasuk, there was a reference to Yehuda. So, what the prophecy is saying that these public assembly places like theaters and circuses that used to be used for all types of called fun and levity and foolishness and entertainment and whatever term you want to use will eventually be used for a place of public Torah study. As we continue in the Gemara, you'll notice a new geometric form. We have a house form. On the outside margin, a mivneh. The structural note indicates Memros Shel Rabbi Yitzhak. Comments of Rabbi Yitzhak will be featured in the upcoming Gemara. The first section of Gemara will deal again with place names and what they represent. Omar Rabbi Yitzhak. Leshem was a city that the tribe of Don conquered. So the pasuk says Leshem, and we've indicated where that pasuk is from. It's from in Sefer Yoshua, the book of Joshua, Perek Yutes, pasuk Mem Zayin. We've written the pasuk in the margin of the Gemara. You'll notice it says Vayalu b'nei Don vayilachamu im Leshem vayukudu oisah. So Don captured Leshem. What is that? Zu Pamios. That's a place in the northern part of Eretz Israel. In fact, from that point, geographically, the Jordan River has its origin. It flows forth from that area. Ekron Teoker, this we saw referred to earlier. There's a little arrow to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text. Just in case you feel it's familiar and you don't remember where you saw it, you can see it appears a few lines up. Ekron Teoker, Zu, Kesri, Bas, Edom. We saw that, in fact, above as well. That's a reference to Kesari Bas Edom. This pasuk, by the way, is from Tzfanya, Perek Beis, Pasuk Dalid. We included this a few lines up in the as far as the margin is concerned. There, the pasuk said, Ashdod Bitzorayim Yigarshua V'Ekron Te'oker. So, Rav Yitzchak is pointing out that Ekron Teoker Zu Kesibas Edom Shi Hoisa Metropolin Shel Melochim. Metropolin sounds like the modern word metropolis. It's actually a compound word. Rashi points out the etymology. It's from the Greek. The word matra, meaning like matriarch, or even the word mother with a close letter similarity, especially if you deal with phonetic pronunciation, mother and matriarch, and in fact Rashi says aim, It means mother, matra, and polin is an expression of officialdom. Lashon Svora, Rashi says. So what is metropolitan? What does that mean for us? So the Gemara is saying that Ekrentoke was Kesri Bas Edrim, which was a metropolitan shel Molochim. What is this? And Molochim, of course, are kings. Iko Diamri de Marbi Bo Malchi. Some say that it was a place that kings were raised there. The Iko Diamri de Mukmi Mino Malchi, that from the citizenry of Ekrentoke or Kesri Bas Edom, they chose their kings. Kings may very well be a term referring to a leader. So either they raised their leadership there or they chose their leadership from there. Kesri Yerushalayim, these two locations, these two places, they in all likelihood represent the Kesri would be the Gentile world, and Yerushalayim a reference to the Jewish world. Im Yomar Loch Adam Chorvu Shteim Al Teamein. If someone says that both are in ruins, both are destroyed, don't believe them. Yoshvu Shteim, both are enjoying their heights. They're both settled, but settled in the context of being both established, then Al Teamein. Don't believe that either. Chorva Kesri v'Yoshu Yerushalayim, if Kesri is in ruins and Jerusalem is settled, or the opposite, Chorva Yerushalayim v'Yoshu Kesri, Jerusalem is in ruins and Kesri is established, Teamein, that you should believe. And this is borne out by psukim that the Gemara will cite, and we have a little numbering here. We're using here Roman numerals because we've actually used all kinds of other numberings and letterings till now, so we're using the Roman numerals as the last resort. So there are two sources for this idea that the two cannot be in the same state of existence, namely the two cannot be on top. One, when one is up, the other is down. Shenemar, so we see the first citation, Imolo hechorava, and this is darshaned. Im maleazu harevazu. If this is complete or filled or established, the other is in ruins. Im maleazu harevazu, and likewise the other way around. Rav Nachman Yitzchok Omar mehocha. Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchok cites the following pasuk, and we should note that this pasuk is in the context of Rivka, the wife of Yitzchak, and she, our matriarch, Rivka, she bore two sons, Yaakov and Esav. Yaakov, the father of the Jewish people, and Esav, the father of the predecessor of Edom, which turned into Romi, which turns into the descendants of Romi, which is a reference to the Gentile world. The pasuk says ulaoim milaoim yeemotz, meaning that when one is on top, the other is down. In fact, if you look at the psukim in with reference to the brachas that Yaakov received from Yitzchak, it says very clearly there that if the Jewish people are keeping their mitzvahs and keeping the Torah the way they are expected to, then they will be on top. And they won't have the yoke of Esav upon them. However, if the Jewish people cast off the Torah yoke, the obligation of keeping the Torah and the mitzvahs, so then the Gentiles will rule over the Jews. The Omar Reb Yitzchak, my dichtiv Yuchan Rosha Baal Loma Tzedek. In this pasuk, Rosha is a reference to Esav. Omar, what we now see is Reb Yitzchak is going to present this pasuk as a sort of dialogue between Yitzchak Avinu and the Ribbono Shel Olam. We'll also see in this Gemara, we have a new marking, the bow tie form, and it's indicated on the side of the Gemara, under our Mivneh, the structural note, Yitzchak and Yaakov appear in this bow tie form, and they are here, Hityachsut Shekol Echad, the attitude and relationship that Yitzchak, father of Esav, and Yaakov, brother of Esav, their attitude, each one of their attitudes toward Esav, in their klapei Hashem, means in their dialogue with the Almighty. That will become clear as we look in the Gemara. So, Omar Yitzchak lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Yitzchak says to the Almighty, Ribbono Shel Olam, Yuchan Esav, show grace to Esav. Esav is my son. Omar lo, Roshu, Kodesh Baruch Hu responds, but he's an evil person. Omar loi, Baal Lomei Tzedek. But Yitzchok says back, is there no one that can be Malamed Tzchus? Is there no one that can find merit for him? To say something positive of a tzedek, of a righteous nature regarding him. Omar lo, be'eretz nechoychos yaveil. The explanation, of course, this is from the pasuk that we are citing right now, from Yeshaya Perkov of Pasuk Yud. And we've included this pasuk on the inside margin of your Shas Ozer, Mark Gemara. You can see the whole pasuk says, Yuchan Rosh Baal Metzedek, Be'eretz Lechos Yavel, Baal Yireh Gulas Ge'us Hashem. This means, how can I find benefit for him? He will, in the future, destroy Eretz Yisrael. So he's currently a Rasha, and as far as seeking merit for him, he is in the future going to destroy Eretz Yisrael. Omar lo, so Yitzchok then concedes, Im kein, Baal Yireh Ge'us Hashem, which is the continuation of that very same pasuk, then he shall not see the glory of God, which is in all likelihood a reference to the final redemption. So that since Esav represents Rishus, and he is a destroyer of the Eretz Yisrael and the Beis HaMikdash, he in fact does not deserve to be a beneficiary in the time of the ultimate redemption. The Omer of Yitzchok. Now, another comment of Rabbi Yitzchok in this very same context: "My dichtiv al titein Hashem ma avayei rasha zmamoy al tofek yarumu sela." The rough translation of the pasuk would be that where do not give the ma'avaye, word like from the word ta'avo, the desire, do not grant the evil one his desires, al tofek, and don't take out yorumu sela. The Rashi explains at the bottom, zamomoy al tofek, al totsienu minechirov zamom. What is a zamom? Kamin tabaz barza shenoy sebechit mishal anoka v'nim sheches boi umitochosko eno mishdameres ki'im bo. It's a type of nose ring that is used for drawing or for holding this anoka. Is a type of animal. It's a type of feisty beast. It's a tough animal to control, and without having this nose ring in position and your ability to hold it in place, it would otherwise go wild. So don't let it loose, basically, is what the pasuk is saying. Don't grant the evil one his desires, and don't take the zmomo from out of him. Now the explanation. Omar Yankiv, the Gemara continues. Omar Yankiv of Nea Kodesh Baruch Hu, Yankiv Avinu addresses the Almighty, and he says, "Ribbono shel al titein li Esav rasha tavas libo. Do not grant to, in this case, my brother, the evil Esav, his heart's desire. Zemomoy al tofek. Don't release him. Zu germamia shel Edom." There's a rather shocking reference to in all likelihood, to Germany. Germany from Edom, the German people. Germany, in a sense, really was a region made up of many, many, maybe many, many tribes, maybe as many as 300 different tribal units. But don't let them loose. Shil molehen yotzin. If they get loose, machriven kolo oilom kuloi. They are capable of destroying the entire world. Though, so Germania shel Edom is a descendant of Esav, and Yankov Avinu is saying prophetically, don't let them loose, because if you let them loose, they are capable of destroying the whole world. V'yomer Rabbi Chama bar Chanina, and now we'll have a description of this of what Germania was. Rabbi Chama says, Tlas me'ok tiri tago ika beGermania shel Edom. There are 300. Ketiri Taga could be a reference to principalities, because a Taga is a crown. So Ketiri Taga is a reference to some type of lords or feudal entities. There are 300 of them that form Germania Shaledom. Utlas Meo Vishisin Vachamisha, 365, Marzavni Ika Baromi. Marzavni is also a type of prince. So there may be another reference to some type of governmental unit. So there, in Rome is made up of 365 Marzavni. Uvachol Yoimo Nafki Hani Lapi Hani. And every day, one goes out toward the other in battle. Umaktil chad minayu, and one gets killed. Umitridi leukmi malka, and then they have to find. They're troubled in trying to find a replacement or to set up a king or a leader. This kind of Gemara is filled with some type of very deep reference to something of a deeper nature. And as we mentioned earlier, we are simply trying to present a rough translation and leave the rest of the depth for some other occasion. The Omar Reb Yitzchok. We continue here with Reb Yitzchok comments. You can see the house form continues from the series we started on Omer Aleph. Here Reb Yitzchok tells us, "In Yomer Loch Odom Yogati V'lo Matzasi." Al Ta'amein. In all likelihood, this section of Gemara, Rav Yitzchok's comment, is here because of what we saw on Amud Aleph with regard to Yerushalayim and Romi. If they're both destroyed or they're both settled, don't believe. And so you have here too the expression of Al Ta'amein, and when yes, Ta'amein means when you should believe something. So, but other than that structural note, this is a new idea. So Reb Yitzchok says that Im Yomar Loch Odom Yogati V'lo Matzasi. If a person says, "I strained myself in Torah learning and I did not find, I don't have results," Al Tamein, don't believe him. Lo Yogati Umatzasi, without extending myself, without straining myself, without investing efforts, I have been successful in Torah learning. Al Tamein, don't believe him. Yogati umatzasi. If a person says, "I expended efforts and came up with results," ta'amein, believe him. Even though we inserted a little more explanation, the Gemara here will add the explanation that we mentioned earlier. Hani mili, this idea of yogati umatzasi, that through expending of efforts you have results, that's true bedivrei Torah. That's with regard to Torah study. Avo b'masa umaton, with regard to business and profiting money, siyata hu min shemaya. That is the issue of results and profits and riches. That is a function of a heavenly assistance. And one doesn't need to go any further than maybe the business pages of any newspaper, and one will discover that there are people that work very hard, invest in vast amounts of resources, and their businesses fail. And there are other people that make that sit back in their swivel chairs and make a few lucky investments in the stock market or some other type of venture, and all of a sudden it takes off and produces tremendous amounts of profit without the individual having made much effort. So the explanation for that is his great profits were a function of siyata dishmaya. And even within the realm of Torah study, we mentioned that if you make efforts, you will see results. And we said that that is true in the case of Torah study. That's limited to the area called lechidudi, for sharpness, for clear understanding. That if a person feels that he doesn't understand some aspect of Torah learning, we will tell him you didn't invest sufficient effort. If you were to invest maximum efforts, you will achieve understanding, sharpness and understanding. Avol. But there's another aspect of Torah learning, leukmi girsa, the issue of retention, memory, remembering the content of one's Torah learning. That is siyata min shemayahi. That is a function of heavenly assistance. And Rashi points out on the upper part of the page, siyata dishmaya v'yesh yogea v'eino motze. that as far as Le'uk Migirsa, which Rashi says on the second line from the top, which is Shelo Tishtakach Mimenu, that he should not forget what he learned, in other words, Torah retention, that's Siyata Dishmaya, and Rashi proves it because V'yesh Yogea, there are people that invest vast efforts in an attempt to remember their Torah learning, V'eino Motzei, and they don't feel success, they don't achieve success in the issue of memory. So one has to understand and make this very clear distinction that that in the pursuit of Torah study, there's a great deal of emphasis placed on efforts and especially the realm of review and more review and more review. The focus of that is to achieve a better understanding, greater clarity. However, if one is focused on retaining and expects that through his efforts, through his physical efforts, so to speak, his investment in Torah studying, as intense as it may be, as a direct means of remembering, he may be disappointed. So we recommend that in addition to the review, the point of the review, if one has the issue of memory in mind, in other words, he wants very much to remember, he ought to, our recommendation is to view the Chazoras as a means of arousing the Siyata Dishmaya, the heavenly assistance, that by showing the Almighty that I love your Torah, and that is evidenced by my reviewing it constantly and my constant preoccupation with it, I show the Almighty how much I love his Torah. The hope being that through that, he, the Almighty, will grant me heavenly assistance, and through that I will be able to remember. But to make an immediate connection or association between more effort will lead to greater retention, that may be a mistake. But one would be able to say, through more effort, I will thereby arouse greater heavenly assistance, which will thereby lead to greater retention. That may very well be. In fact, the Gemara in Maseches Nedarim describes Moshe Rabbeinu as studying the Torah and reviewing it, but kept forgetting until Ad Shenitan Lo B'Matana, until the Kodesh Baruch Hu gave it to him as a gift. So that even the greatest of our people that ever lived, Moshe Rabbeinu himself, needed Siyata Dishmaya in order to retain his Torah learning. We might point out that it says in Maseches Avodah Zarah Daf Ches that one is entitled to add in his Shmona Esrei personal requests, each bracha having addressing a separate topic, a specific topic. One is able to insert a personal request in each topic. For example, if Lo Aleinu, heaven forbid, one has an ill individual in his family, in the bracha dealing with health, Rifa'enu Hashem, we add the special prayer for his health. In that same Gemara, the Gemara with the Rashi explanation points out that in the first bracha of the daily Shmona Esrei, the Atochonin, the bracha in which we ask for wisdom, there it's pointed out if one finds that he is forgetting his Torah learning, he should put a request that he should not forget his Torah learning. What do we see from that? That we see that in order to achieve retention, it is recommended to daven, to pray for it. It doesn't necessarily say in that particular Gemara that one prays to achieve greater clarity, because the pursuit of greater clarity, that's a function of your efforts, as opposed to the area of retention. That's not a function, a direct outgrowth of my efforts. That requires heavenly intervention. We are making all of these comments so as to be mechazik, all of you who are learning with us, to realize that one should not use as a standard of success the pure standard of retention. What do we mean is that even if a person feels that his retention is not 100%, is not maximum, nevertheless one should not feel any sense of failure and lack of success. One should nevertheless keep praying, keep reviewing, and keep going on with a feeling of happiness and satisfaction from the fact that he's able to pursue Torah study. Continuing in the Gemara, the Omer of Yitzhak, Im ro'iso rosh ha'sham esacheches loy. If you see an evil person that is experiencing success, al tisgarebo, don't try to incite him, don't try to arouse him, even though you may be pious, he is a rasha, he is evil, don't incite him when you see him experiencing success. Shenemar, the Pasuk says, al tischar bamreim. Before we go too much further, we look at the topic heading in the outside margin, the nosei. We've entitled this as Eich Lityaches L'Rosh Hashashah Mesachek Islo, how to view and deal with an evil person that's experiencing being on top, being successful. The Gemara goes on to add to this several stages or several additions. You'll notice in our Mivneh structural note the appearance of a double underline, Veloy Oid Ela. You'll notice that there is further, there is more to say on this topic and will be added each successive line of Gemara. So we just said that if you see a Rosh Hashashah Mesachek Islo, don't incite him. Velo od, not only that, Ela Shidrochav Matzlichim. His ways, he will be successful. Shenemar Yochilu Drochav Becholes. By the way, this pasuk is found in Sefer Tehillim, and this particular pasuk of Yochilu is from Perek Yud Pasuk Hey. In the outside, in the inside margin of our Mark Gemaras, you'll notice we've included the pasuk where it says Yochilu Drochav Becholes. So the Gemara will be breaking down this particular pasuk. So we said that a Rasha that's having success, he will be successful in all his ways, which gives one room to feel, and maybe that's what the Gemara's intention is over here, to say that if you do start up with him, he will defeat you, because Yochilu Drochav B'choleis. Not only that, V'lo Oid Elo Shezoicha B'din, that in a court setting, in a legal battle, he will be successful. Shenemar Meroim Mishpotecha Minegdo. In other words, he will remove all those that attempt to fight him legally. He will see the defeat of his enemies. At this point, the Gemara raises a question. You can see that it's a long question by virtue of the kuf that's encircled with a long vertical dashed line. The Gemara asks, Aini, is this all really so? Amar Rav Yochanan Mishum Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai, Mutar Lizgaras Berushoyim Boilam Hazeh. It is allowed to incite, to start up, to fight the evil, even in this world. Shenemar, Oiz Veitoro, Yahalu Rosha Veshamri Torah, Yizgaru Bam. The ones that abandon Torah, the Pasuk says, they praise the Rosha, they praise the wicked one. However, the ones that keep the Torah, they, Yizgaru Bam, shall, they will fight them. Vitanya, we have a Tanaic source. You can see a framed section indicating a Tanaic quote. Rabbi Dostoy ben Mosun Oim Omar, Mutter Lizgaras Burshaim Bolomazeh. Rabbi Dostoy says it's Mutter to strive against the wicked in this world. Vimlach Shechodom Loimar, if someone whispers to you and says, hey, but it says, Al Tischar Bamareim Val Tekana Boisi Avlo, it says that the suggestion here is as well, you shouldn't strive against the wicked and incite the sinners. Anyone who says that, it's me sheliboy noikvoy oimer kain. Someone who has a guilty conscience, someone who himself is a sinner, who feels a sense of guilt, he will tell you, well, don't start up with the sinners. Yeah, that's because he himself is one. But rather, that's all not true. The pasuk is not saying don't start up with the wicked. Ela Al tischar b'mreim, the word tischar b'mreim means liyos k'mreim. Don't compete with the wicked to be like the wicked. Don't try to outdo them in their in their sinning. The altikana boisi avlo, liois koisi avlo. Tikana may be translated as don't be jealous. Instead of don't incite, here it's taken to mean don't be jealous of the violators of sin, of the oisei avlo, the practitioners of iniquity, to be like them. Don't be jealous of them, to be like them. The oimer, al yikana libcho b'chatoim ki im biyiras Hashem kol hayom. Your heart should not be jealous of sins, but rather your heart should be desirous of fear of heaven all day. So what do we see from all of this? We see from this long question, just like was suggested at the beginning of the long question, that it's mutter to start up with the wicked, even in this world. And as far as psukim, that one may have thought otherwise, all they're trying to say is don't compete with them in their evil, and don't be jealous of their iniquity. But as far as trying to fight them, by all means, you should. So how are we to resolve this with Reb Yitzchok's teaching from above? Loi kasha. There is no contradiction. Ha b'mili didei, ha b'mili d'shmaya. When it comes to personal matters, so don't start up with him. When it comes to matters of mitzvahs and heavenly concerns, that mili d'shmaya, then one should start up. One should not allow the wicked to desecrate and profane that which is holy. V'boyesema, another approach is ha v'ha b'mili didei. Both teachings apply to mundane matters, velokashya. And still there's no contradiction. Ha b'tzadik gomor, ha b'tzadik sheinu gomor. It depends. If the one starting up with the Rosh Hashashah b'sachek esloi is a tzadik gomor, a completely righteous individual, then he has enough merit and protection that he will survive the strife with the wicked. However, if someone is a tzadik sheinu gomor, he is not a completely righteous individual. He is advised, like Reb Yitzchok says, don't start up with the wicked. The Yomar Rav Huna. Rav Huna bears this out in his teaching. The Yomai Dechtiv Loma Tabit Boydim Tachrish Bevela Rosh Tzadik Mimenu. The pasuk is an address to the Almighty. Why do you look on and remain silent when the Rasha consumes he who is more righteous than the evil one? So this pasuk is describing the consumption of the evil consuming the more righteous. So the inference that one can make is as follows: Tzadik mimenu bolea. If someone is more righteous than the wicked, that means you have someone who's totally wicked and someone who's not totally wicked, who's partially righteous. So the partially righteous is more righteous than the wicked. But nevertheless, the Rasha will be able to consume someone who is a slightly less wicked than he. However, Tzadik Gomur, someone who is completely righteous, Eino Bolea, that the Rasha will not be able to consume. The Iboyesema Shom Esacheches Loishani. A third approach to resolve Reb Yitzchok's teaching with Rav Dostoy and the Tanaic source that we saw as part of the long question is: there is a person who is wicked, and then there's a person who is not only wicked, but he's also achieving great success. So that Reb Yitzchok's teaching is limited not to the rank and file wicked individual, but if you see someone who is a Rasha who is also experiencing great success, then everyone is warned, is advised to stay away. Don't strive against them. However, if you see someone who is he's wicked, but he's not experiencing great success, so there Reb Dostoy's teaching comes in that says Mutar Lizgaros Mishon Bulamazeh. Omar Ula, this piece of Gemara will also make reference again to places like we mentioned before. Italia shel Yavon, the place called Italia of the Greeks. Rashi says Italia shel Yavon krach godol shegodel b'shvil avoin Menashe. This is a large city that sprout up, that started, its origins are in the sins of the king Menashe. The king Menashe was a king who was actually the son of the righteous Chizkiyahu HaMelech. However, he didn't see great success with his son, in terms of piety, his son was machnis a tselem, an idol, behechal, into the Beis HaMikdash. At that point, that he, this Menashe, this King Menashe, put an idol in the Beis HaMikdash, Yorad Gavriel v'noatz konabiyam, the angel Gavriel came and wedged a rod into the sea, the gadol alav chelke gdela, v'nivne alav italia shel yavon, miye el yosha. That's Metargaminon Minigvas Italia. So that the Pasuk indicates that there was this rod, or the, we'll call it the oral tradition, tells us about a rod that the angel wedged into the sea, and around that rod, so to speak, there accumulated sand, and an empire eventually grew from that, which we know as Rome. So Ula tells us that the roots of Rome, of the Roman Empire, started from the sin of Menashe. Well, Ula tells us that Italia Shiavam ze krach godol shiromi, the havis tlas me aparso, al tlas me aparso. The description of Romi is a place that measures 300 parsa by 300 parsa. Vieshpa 365, that's Shin Samacheth, is the numeral equivalent of 365. Shvokim, markets, or commercial centers, Kaminyin Mosachama 365, is also the number of days in a solar year. Vekotan Shebekulam, the smallest of these commercial centers, Shel Mochrei Ofos, it was of the those that are vendors of birds, of chicken, and the like. The Havya Shisha Sarmil al Shisha Sarmil, this smallest of commercial centers, measured 16 by 16 meal. Umelech Soed B'chol Yom Be'chamehemani, and the king feasted in each one, in one of them, each day. Each day he feasted in a separate shuk. V'hador ba, afa pishenu nolad ba, noto pras mi beis hamelech. One who lives there, even though he wasn't born there, gets a portion of food from the king. V'nolad ba, afa pishenu dor ba, noto pras mi beis hamelech. And one who is born there, even though he doesn't live there, also gets a portion from the king. U'shloishes alofim be'boni yesh bo. There are 3,000 bathhouses there. V'chamesh meos chalonos malin oshan chutz lechoyma. There are 500 chalonos that enable the smoke or the steam to rise above the wall. The chalonos, Rashi explains, chalonos shemalim mehen oshan chutz lechoma shehen gvoy min achoma. These windows or vents that enable the steam to escape were higher than the wall. The ain ma'ashin es achoman, the smoke would not discolor, smoke accumulation would not discolor the wall. Vizel chashivus, what's being described here is something of importance and significance. So that there were 500 of these in that area. Tzido echod yam, we're describing the geographic boundaries of this Krach Godol Shalomi, one side was the sea, Tzido Echad Har Mugvos, the other side were mountains and hills, Tzido Echad Mechitza Shel Barzel, one side was an iron curtain, but Tzido Echad Chusis Umetzul, and the other side was sand and depths. This, of course, last section of Gemara is something with a great number of hints in it to things that are beneath the surface of the translation of the Gemara. The Mishnah. Koru es haMegillah b'Adar HaRishon v'nisabru HaShana. If they read the Megillah in the month of Adar, and it turned out to become a leap year, so that means they added a second Adar, Korin osa b'Adar Sheni. There is a need to read the Megillah again in the added Adar, in the second Adar. Ein bein Adar HaRishon l'Adar HaSheni ala kriyas haMegillah. Umatonos levyonim. According to the Mishnah, there is no difference in terms of mitzvah practices between the first Adar and the second Adar, except for the reading of the Megillah and the gifts to the poor. Meaning that if you did those in the first Adar and not in the second Adar, you have not fulfilled your obligations. The Gemara infers, though, from this Mishnah, ha le'inyan seder parshios zeh v'zeh shoven. But with regard to the special additional Torah readings, there are 4 weeks of additional Torah readings that are practiced around Purim. 2 of them preceding Purim, Parshas Shkolim and Parshas Zohar, and 2 after Purim, Parshas Parah and Parshas HaChodesh. Those are the seder parshios. With regard to those, the first Adar and the second Adar are the same, which would mean that if you read them in the first Adar, you have no need to read them in the second Adar. The Gemara raises a question. We've featured this with a long question marking. You can see the shin that's encircled to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text with a vertical dashed line. The Gemara asks, Moni Masnisin. Who is the author of our Mishnah? The Gemara now lists off 3 Tanoim. We haven't seen them yet. They are featured in a Tanaic source that will be presented in the Gemara. But after analyzing each one of their opinions, we will discover that our Mishnah does not compare to any of them. So the Gemara says, Lo Tanakama, Velo Rabbi Elazar Bar Yosi, Velo Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. Our Mishnah does not seem to parallel any of them. Let's say a word about structure before we get into the Gemara itself. First of all, you'll notice that we've dashed, underlined, with a diagonal dash on the word Moni, Moni Masnisin. This is to draw your attention to the Gemara a few lines later. You'll notice after the Tanaic source, there's a bracketed section. And following the bracketed section, you see the word Moni again with this same dashed underlining. That's in order to draw your attention to the fact that the Gemara raises the question here, who is the author of our Mishnah? And the Gemara then will go over the question, the same question, who is the author, and then showing how each one of the opinions that were cited initially do not conform to our Mishnah. We will be presented with a Tanaic source. As you can see, that's in a frame. Right after the Tanaic source, there's a bracketed section. The bracketed section, technically speaking, here is not for the standard skipping purpose, which we feature most of the time when we present the brackets. But rather, it's there, the bracketed section is there to show that only after the brackets will the Gemara relate to the opening question of Moni Masnisin. Inside the bracketed section, the Gemara will clarify what is the difference between the Tanakama and Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, which is information that will be absolutely necessary to know the difference before we can really investigate the question of Moni Masnisin. Hopefully, this introduction will serve us in good stead as we go into the Gemara. We just said that our Mishnah doesn't conform to any of these Tanoim, these other Tanaic authorities. Well, where do they appear? Desanya, the following source. Koru es ha-Megillah ba'adar ha-Rishon v'nisabra ha-Shona. Same scenario as our Mishnah. They read it, the Megillah in the first Adar, and then there was a second Adar added. Koren oiso ba'adar sheni. One is expected to read the Megillah again in the second Adar. Shekol mitzvah shenogos b'sheni, nogos b'rishon, chutz mi-mikra Megillah. All mitzvah obligations that are binding in the second Adar, one could fulfill them in the first Adar, with the exception of mikra Megillah, namely that if one did Megillah in the first Adar, he does not fulfill his Megillah obligation, has to read it again in the second Adar. Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Yossi Omer, ein kuri noiso b'adar asheni. Rabbi Elazar says you don't have to read it in the second Adar. If you read it in the first Adar, no need to read it in the second Adar. Shekol mitzvah shenogos b'sheni, noagos b'rishon. Whatever one would expect to fulfill in the second Adar, they can be fulfilled if in the first Adar. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says, very similar to the Tanakhama, that if you read it in the first Adar, you have to read it in the second Adar. Shekol mitzvah shenogos b'sheni ein noagos b'rishon. That all mitzvahs that are binding in the second Adar are not fulfilled if you do it in the first Adar, which, very once again, is essentially the same as that which the Tanakhama said. Vishavin, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel adds, that they are the same, the first and second adar are the same, behesved of Tainis, Shasurin Bazel Bazeh, that just like the 14th of Adar in the second Adar is forbidden in eulogies and fasting, so too with regard to the first Adar. The Gemara opens up, as you can see, we have this bracketed section. We presented a Tanakh source with three opinions in Tanakam, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Shimon Leo, and we still have to deal with the question of our Mishnah authorship. And you'll notice after this bracketed section, the Gemara then says, money, who is the author? And it goes over each one of the shitas and shows how our Mishnah doesn't conform to any one of these authors. Before we can analyze that, we have to understand what each shita himself really holds. And we, at this point, we are lacking clarity even with regard to that, because we see three opinions, but we don't see the difference between the first and the third. Here in the brackets, the Gemara analyzes that. Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, Hainu Tanakama. They seem to be saying the same thing, that if you read the Megillah first Adar, you have not fulfilled your requirement. You have to read it in the second Adar. And they both seem to indicate that the mitzvahs that one needs to fulfill in the second Adar, one does not accomplish them if he does them in the first Adar. So what's the difference between them? Omer of Papa, Seder, Parshios, Iko Binayu. The issue of the four special Torah readings will be a point of difference. The Tanakama Sovar, the first opinion in the Tanaic source holds L'chadchila B'sheni, the best time to do the four Torah readings, the special additional Torah readings, that's in the second Adar. V'i Ovud, Barishon Ovud, and if you did the four Parshios in the first Adar, you have fulfilled your obligation. Bar mi mikra Megillah, with the exception of the Megillah reading itself, the af al gav dekor b'rishon koro b'sheni, that even if you did read it in the first Adar, you have to read it in the second Adar. Rav Elozer Rav Yossi, who is brought in here, even though he's not really the focus of this current discussion, our discussion is focusing on the difference between Rav Shimon Leo and the Tanakhama, but nevertheless, the Gemara weaves in Rav Elozer Rav Yossi, because he's obviously different from the rest. He holds Savar, Afilu Mikra Megillah L'chadchila B'rishon. According to Rav Elozer Rav Yossi, you fulfill in the best way the Megillah reading even during the first Adar. In other words, if one read it the first Adar, finished, he's done his mitzvah on a lechatchila, on a preferred level. He has no need to do it in the second Adar. Reb Shimon Leo Sovar, Afilu Seder Parshios, E Koru Barishon, Koru Basheni. And this is the point of difference between Reb Shimon Leo and the Tanakama. That is, that if you read the four Torah, additional Torah readings, Parshios, Shkolim, Zohar, Porah, and Parshas Achodesh, if you read them in the first Adar, you have not fulfilled your obligation. You have to read them in the second Adar. So now, the three shitas are very clear. Tanakama, Rav Elozer Rav Yossi, and Rav Shimon Leo. Money. What about our Mishnah? Who is our Mishnah? E Tanakama, if you want to parallel our Mishnah with the Tanakama, Kashyo Matonos. The issue of the Matanos Levyonim will be a point of difference. In other words, according to our Mishnah, if you do Matanos Levyonim in the first Adar, you have not fulfilled your obligation. According to the Tanakama of this Tanaic source, you have fulfilled your obligation, because the Tanakama of this Tanaic source said the only thing you do not fulfill in the first Adar is Mikra Megillah. But Matanos Levyonim, you will have fulfilled. That's unlike our Mishnah. Next, E Rabbi Elozer Rabbi Yossi, Kashya Nami Mikra Megillah. Our Mishnah is very clearly not like Rabbi Elozer Rabbi Yossi. According to Rabbi Elozer Rabbi Yossi, you do fulfill Megillah in first Adar. According to our Mishnah, you do not. E Rabbi Shimon Meliel, if our Mishnah were to be parallel to him, to Rabbi Shimon Meliel, Kashya Seder Parshios. The issue of the four Torah portions, the four additional Torah portions, will be a point of difference. At the opening of the Gemara, right after the Mishnah, it was pointed out that, according to our Mishnah, the four additional Torah readings, one does fulfill if he reads them in the first Adar. According to our analysis of Rav Shimon Leo, he will not fulfill the four Torah readings if he reads them in the first Adar. Once again, our Mishnah doesn't parallel Rav Shimon Leo on the issue of the four Parshios. The Gemara answers. We have a little one, because this will be followed by an alternative approach. Number one, we oilom Tanakama. Our Mishnah does conform to the Tanakama. What did we say was a point of difference? We thought that a point of difference concerned the Matonis Levyonim. So the Gemara explains, the Tanakama of the Brisa, of the framed source, Mikra Megillah, he mentions that you do not fulfill the Megillah in the first Adar, V'adin Matonis Levyonim, and likewise one will not fulfill Matonis Levyonim in the first Adar, just like our Mishnah. D'ho b'ho talyo, Matonis Levyonim is tied in to the Mikra Megillah. We know, and we've seen this in previous Gemaras, that the Aniyim await the Megillah reading in order to receive their Matanos Yavyonim, so that these two mitzvahs are interconnected. Therefore, our Mishnah, which says that in the first Adar you are not going to fulfill the Megillah reading and Matanos Yavyonim, that parallels the Tanakhama that said you do not fulfill the Mikra Megillah in Adar Rishon, and part and parcel of Mikra Megillah is the Matanos Yavyonim as well. The Eboy Sema, another approach as far as authorship of our Mishnah, the Oilom Reb Shimon ben Gamliel. The Oilom Reb Shimon ben Gamliel, our Mishnah can conform to Reb Shimon ben Gamliel. Umas Nisan Chesuri Mechasra, and our Mishnah is left brief. What did we say was the problem before we go on with the answer? We said that the issue of the Arba Parshios was a point of difference. Our Mishnah implied that the four Parshios, one fulfills in Adar Rishon and does not have to do it again in Adar Sheni. Rav Shimon Leo, it was pointed out, holds that the four Parshios, one does not fulfill in Adar Rishon and has to do it again in Adar Sheni. We want to say right now that our Mishnah is like Rav Shimon Leo. However, the Mishnah was left a bit brief. V'hochi kotoni. And thusly, we should read the Mishnah, and eventually we'll see how our Mishnah can conform to Rav Shimon Leo. It says, and we've framed this off because this is the way the Gemara wants you to understand our Mishnah. Ein bein arbo sor shabad arishon, arbo sor shabad arsheni. There's no difference between the 14th of Adar Rishon and the 14th of Adar Sheni, elo mikra Megillah umatonos, with the exception of the Megillah reading and Matanos Yavyonim. Namely, if you did them in the first, you have not fulfilled your obligation. However, with regard to eulogizing and fasting, the 14th of Adar Rishon and the 14th of Adar Sheni are the same. Both are forbidden in Hespin and Tainus. Vilu Seder Parshios Lo Mairi. Our Mishnah is not dealing with the Seder Parshios. Our Mishnah was dealing, according to this rereading of the Mishnah, with the 14th of Adar Rishon. Not with all of the other halachas of Adar, namely the other halachas which of the month of Adar, which includes the issue of the Seder Parshios. Omar Rabbi Chia Bar Ovin. We should point out that since with this rereading of the Mishnah, our Mishnah simply doesn't, it only deals, it focuses on the 14th of Adar, it doesn't focus on the rest of the mitzvahs of the month of Adar, hence our Mishnah does not, there's no conflict between our Mishnah and Reb Shimon Gamliel, because Reb Shimon Gamliel was dealing, in addition to the 14th of Adar, he was dealing with other halachas that relate to the month of Adar, including the issue of the Seder Parshios. So there is no conflict between the two. Omar Rabbi Chiya Bar Ovin, Omar Rabbi Yochanan Hilchasok, Reb Shimon Gamliel, Shomer Mishum Rabbi Yossi. He rules like Reb Shimon Gamliel's approach to the above-mentioned issues of Adar Rishon and Adar Sheni. Omar Rabbi Yochanan, Ushnehem Mikro Echad Darshu. Both Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Yossi, who placed an emphasis on Adar Rishon, and Reb Shimon Gamliel, who placed an emphasis on Adar Sheni, Darshan the same posuk. They shnei mikra echad darshu b'chol shana v'shana. This pasuk is at the end of the of Megillas Esther. You'll notice in the outside margin our mivneh note, we have a double underline with dots in it, and we've tried to emphasize the two tanoim with this marking. The Gemara, Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Yossi Savar, He who says that the Megillah reading is accomplished in Adar Rishon, b'chol shana v'shana. He refers to this pasuk. Ma kol shana v'shana Adar hasomuch l'shvat. Just like in a non-leap year where there's only one Adar. So the Adar that you fulfill, the mitzvah, is the Adar that comes right after Shvat. Afkan, so to in a leap year, Adar hasomuch l'shvat. The Adar that's next to the month of Shvat. The month of Shvat precedes Adar. So, in the case you have two Adars, you'll fulfill your mitzvah in the first Adar. This is the Adar that's next to, that follows the month of Shvat. Rav Shmuel Sovar, b'chol shana v'shana. Looking at the same pasuk, he says, ma kol shana v'shana Adar asomuch l'nisan. Just like every year in a non-leap year, a singular Adar year, you fulfill the mitzvah in the Adar that precedes the month of Nisan, the Adar that comes right before the month of Nisan. Afkan, so too in a leap year situation where you have two Adars, which Adar do you fulfill the mitzvah in? Adar hasomuch l'nisan, the Adar that precedes the month of Nisan, which will be Adar Sheni. The Gemara now contrasts these two opinions. Bishlam or Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Yossi, who I understand well, according to him, who holds you read in the first, Mistaber Taima. His logic is more likely, is more logical. The Ein Mavirin Ala Mitzvahs. There's a concept that if you encounter the chance to do a mitzvah, you don't pass it over, you don't wait, you don't delay, do it immediately. So Ein Mavir Ala Mitzvahs, the first chance that you have to do it, do it. So if you have an Adar that comes, do it in the first Adar. Based on this principle of Ein Mavirin Ala Mitzvahs. Elo Rav Shimon Leo Mai Taimo. But what about Rav Shimon Leo? What's the basis of his reasoning that says delay it to the second Adar when you have this issue of Ein Mavirin Ala Mitzvahs to contend with? You notice we have a diamond. This is explained in the outside margin. Shnei Ta'omim, two reasons LaHasbir Shitos Rav Shimon Leo, to explain his approach. Omar Rebbe Tovi, Taim Rav Shimon Leo, the reason from Shimon Leo that places the mitzvahs of Purim and the Adar mitzvahs in the second Adar, Mismach Gula Gula Adif, he places a premium on the opportunity to place next to one another the two redemptions. We're talking about the redemption of Purim and the redemption experienced during Pesach, which was in the month of Nisan. Rabbi Eliezer, Omar Taimur Shimon Leo, Mehocha. Dichtiv v'kayim es yigeres apurim azos ha-shenis. The pasuk says, makes a reference to ha-shenis, sounds like the second month, the second Adar. So based on this, the pasuk indicates that the celebration should take place in the second of the Adars. The Gemara will point out, the istirich le-michtav ha-shenis, the itzrich lemichtav bechol shana v'shana. Both we saw Reb Shlomo Leo use both of these psukim in effect to get you to Adar Sheni. He used the pasuk of bechol shana v'shana that we saw earlier, and just like every year it was the Adar Asomach l'Nisan, and he's now using this pasuk too of Hashenis. So the Gemara will deal with the upcoming sugya why. We need, in effect, we need both of these psukim. So with that, we conclude our shiur for today.